This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good evening. I'm Caroline Oh, and my guest this evening left a budding career in banking in 1989 to orchestrate the turnaround of his father's retail and wholesale business. Today, that same business has evolved into a chain of hypermarkets, supermarkets, emporiums, all sorts, all under the Maidin umbrella. So we welcome the managing director of Maidin Muhammad Holdings Berhad, Yang Bahagia Datuk Dr. Haji Amir Ali Maidin. Welcome, Datuk. Very nice to have
thank you
here with us. You know what? Legend has it that you refused to be part of the family business to begin with. Is that true?
Well, you know, when you do your first degree in the U.S. in 1975, 1976, kind of thing, you know, I think during those times, and my father was a shopkeeper, you know, I think you want to work in a bank, you want to work in a corporate office, and you don't want to start working in a shop. But after some time, when you work for people, then you realize there's no such thing as being your own boss.
Right.
That makes a difference. Yeah.
Okay. So there wasn't really an aversion to the industry per se?
No, not really.
Okay. So at what stage of your life did you actually make that switch over?
Actually, after working in a bank for about 8 years, you know, there was a time that you think that whether you want to do your business with your parents, with your father and your brothers, or you keep working.
Yeah.
And of course, we keep working, you go up the ladder, you know, and those kind of things, then you probably be an MD of a bank or something like that.
Yes.
You know, but when you're on your own, there's a difference. But always take a calculated risk. Not to say you want to do something and you go ahead and just do it.
Yeah.
Because you have to take a calculated risk. My wife was working, she was a lecturer in the university. We had two kids. So I said, okay, now, worst come to worst, what can go wrong?
So
my business fails. Fine.
Right.
At least my wife is earning a salary.
There's still money coming in.
Yeah. I won't drop dead. I can always get a job, I hope.
Yes.
You know, and life goes on.
Did you enjoy the corporate sector at all?
Of course. Of course. It's nice because you learn a lot. And I always tell people who want to get into business, go and work. I always tell the same thing to my children. Go and work. Because once you work, you get files thrown at you. You get coffee for your boss. And you listen. And you learn a lot because you meet, especially in banking, you meet all kind of customers.
Yeah.
You know, you meet a steel miller, you meet a Karya Runcit fella. So you really learn their businesses, learn what is cash flow, what is gearing. If you just go into business like that, you might not have that ability to know the business better.
Yeah. So what was the jarring difference for you between working in the corporate world and actually coming into business for yourself?
By yourself, you do everything yourself. In a corporate world, things get done.
Right.
I mean, there's hierarchy. You've got the secretary. You've got staff working for you. When you open your business, you're not only the boss. You're also the worker. You're the slave. You're everybody. You know, and that is the real difference. And especially in the retail business, which is actually people always say retail is detail. Because you really have to be meticulous. But you learn to be meticulous when you work in a bank because figures matters. So this is where you pick up things. And then when you do it, then you realize it. And it's not easy because being in a small business, you employ staff, whether they respect you or not, and how to get maximum value from your staff.
Right.
It's not really easy.
No, I wouldn't imagine so. So you know, at that point, you're thinking, okay, it's very different. I want to go into business for myself. Calculated risk. My wife is working. Worst comes to worst. The business actually does fail. But what were you hoping to achieve? I mean, now I've just mentioned hypermarkets, supermarkets, emporiums, and the likes, all sorts of different things. Was it all in the plan?
You know, if you ask me, it's never in the plan. I think people sometimes say, yes, I wanted to do this and that. It is never, if you ask me, it's never like that. I think you almost say, yes, I'm going to start this business. If I can have one shop, wow, I've done it. When you have one shop, you say, but this is only one shop. How about having two shops together becoming one? Then as you grow, and it's never enough.
Yeah.
It's never enough, not only in terms of money is never enough, but you need to keep growing. Competition is there.
Yes.
You know, and after you have grown to a certain extent, then you realize there's a lot of things in this world that you can do when you're big, when you have the money. Okay? And you can do a lot of CSR. Seriously, you can do a lot of CSR activities, not necessarily just giving money, but human capital.
But that realization came a little bit later when you were much bigger.
Sure.
So what was the motivation? Was it financial at the time?
I think to be independent. independent, to be able to do your things your way,
mm-hmm.
and not having somebody on top of you saying, do it this way.
Mm.
You'd like to do it my way.
Was that very much the case for you in the corporate world?
Well, you know, whether you're in a bank or wherever you are, you always have a boss.
Mm-hmm.
So you are told to do things, and I think in those 1980s, you follow.
Mm. Very top-down.
Top-down. You just get your the thing done, you submit to the board, you know,
mm-hmm.
you follow the rules.
What did you want to do so differently in your own setup? Because you're thinking, okay, you know, I don't want to work for somebody, I don't want to have the boss above me telling me what to do, I don't like this top-down structure. What did you want to do differently in your own business at that point?
Actually, my father's business is not a bad business, mm. you know. It's a small business, but they used to run it the old way. You know, actually, I don't think he ever has seen a cash flow. You know, it's a matter of just having money in the drawer and, you know, hoping for the best, giving post-dated check to suppliers, you know, and tough,
yes.
really tough. So I thought, you know, having gone to school,
yeah.
supposedly management, this and that, all kind of things, you know, that hopefully you can make a difference in the retail business.
Mm-hmm.
And I frankly think it does make a difference. Education makes a difference. Having work for somebody, it really adds up. When you open up your business, you can see things in different perspective. So it's not only my father was in business, his cousins were in business, and we were actually competitors in business,
mm.
you know. So when I opened up the small shop in Masjid, India, I remember my so-called relatives saying that, don't worry about him. No, he doesn't know how to do business, he's a banker, he's going to close in a month or two anyway, so don't worry. But I've learned, never underestimate your competitor.
Mm.
You know, you have competition, but never, no matter how big you are, never underestimate your competitor.
Indeed. So you said, okay, working experience is important, education is important. So in terms of just at that point, running your business, what do you think was more valuable to you? The fact that you had working experience, or was it the education that really made it so much more than what it was?
The satisfaction. The real satisfaction of being able to do the way that you want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Stuff. You work 12 hours, 14 hours, but you're working for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Very tough. You need a beautiful wife who is sacrificing her life.
Yes.
Real sacrifice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if there's no sacrifice from the family, it's not going to work.
What was it like back in the day when you had your wife obviously supporting you this way? What were your days like?
What day? There are no days. I mean, there's no days and no night, because you are basically working. And during those days, you know, you for the daily sales, you take the money, you bring it home, you count the money,
yeah.
you know, then the next morning, you know, by the time you get home, it's about 10, 11 o'clock.
Mm.
The next morning, 6:30, you're back in your shop.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, then you have to buy things, and it's tough. It's really tough having children, you know. But lucky you have a supportive wife, and you have a very supportive family structure.
Mm-hmm.
It's very important. The parents are supportive, the brothers are supportive,
mm.
you know.
Did they help in terms of your family? Because I imagine if you're spending so much time at work and taking care of your shop, and your whole day is filled, you must have missed out a lot of family time.
Of course. You see, it's easy to say, balance of life, have enough time for your family, do this, wash your car.
It's a Hallmark kind of card.
Yeah, you know, but in the real world, it doesn't happen. You have a choice. You want to work hard, you want to do something, you want to be somebody, you really have to work hard 12, 14 hours a day.
Hmm.
You said, no, I want a balanced life, fine. Work somewhere, 9 to 5, go home, wash your car.
Do you believe it has to be one or the other?
It's tough. In this competitive world, it's tough. But of course, whatever time you have, if you use it properly, you know, it's just not number of hours, isn't it? It's how you use that time constructively with your family. It's enough.
Yeah.
See, because you see, there's one thing that that I always do, and I think maybe it's from my wife's side more.
Mm-hmm.
I go home, I shower, and she comes and sits next to me, and we talk.
What do you talk about?
Everything. Let her talk, tell her what she wants to tell me, whether it's the children, her work, family, whatever issues,
mm-hmm.
half an hour, could be 45 minutes, it might drag to dinner, then I talk. No, I had this problem, or whatever happened. So you get that out of your chest.
Yes.
That's the supportive role of husband and wife. I'm not saying that it's only the wife.
Mm-hmm.
It's the husband also. It works both ways.
Yes.
Talk, but always try to listen more.
How long have you been married for, Dato?
1979.
Wow.
So 35, 34 years.
Right. So the secret to a happy marriage then, talking.
I think that's the most important part of a marriage. Being able to talk to somebody and somebody who's willing to listen and not be very critical.
Yeah.
You know, just listen. And actually, just want someone to listen.
Mm.
And my wife is a psychologist, so she tells me that.
Perfect.
Just listen.
Yes.
Just listen. I'm just telling you something. Don't be critical. I'm not asking you to something. You know, I'm just telling you. I'm sharing with you.
Yeah.
I think that's more important than anything else.
So what was the toughest part of those years, the early parts?
I think the toughest part is to make sure you have breakfast with your children and have dinner with your family. But I think my wife is very particular. Even when the children were growing, teenagers and whatnot, you know how children are.
Yeah.
They want to be independent. But she insists, breakfast together, dinner together.
Oh.
You know, and they have to come back. I mean, wherever they are, they want to go on a date or they're having something, whatever, come back for dinner. Then you can go off and do whatever you want.
So was that a constant all the time for you? Whatever happened at work, no matter how tough it was, you had breakfast with your kids in the morning and dinner with them at night?
I think that was only possible later for the dinner.
Hmm.
The breakfast, yes, no issues with that.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you're running a shop, you're going back at 9 o'clock, there's no dinner with your family.
Yeah.
Then kids go to school, they sleep early.
Mm-hmm.
But you must try.
Mm-hmm.
You must try.
Right. So you were talking about competitors a little earlier. Never underestimate your competitors. From the sound of your voice, it sounds as though you went through some really tough times with that. Am I right?
Well, I think all of us will go through tough time because there's always competition. There are people here that... But I guess in any business, you know, before you come up, they better put you down. Otherwise, as you grow bigger and stronger, it's not that easy.
Right. So what were those barriers for you that put you down?
I think it's challenges.
Hmm.
Challenges. When you have competition, it's challenges. Especially when I first opened my first hypermarket in Subang Jaya, where the biggest multinational hypermarket, our neighbor, you know. And even when I went to a bank to ask for the loan to put up the building, you must be crazy. You know, you are Maidin. You know, why are you going to Subang Jaya, middle income? Go to Masjid India, go to Kampung Baru maybe. You know, that is your market. But the best is if you open next to your competitor, who is very strong. If you make it, you have made it. You know, then you know your strength, you also know your weaknesses.
But is that the reason you decided to go along the hypermarket line and choose that location?
Yes. Because you must compete. To be strong, you must compete.
Hmm.
Otherwise, you will always be weak. You know? And if you go back to only to your area, you cater to only your customers, you will never strengthen your weaknesses.
Okay. You know, these days, there aren't many people, or rather young people, who like to go into the family business, so to speak. Why do you think that is?
You see... People, let me put it this way, even my own children, okay? My brother's children, they have grown up, but they don't work for us. We don't allow them to join us.
Why is that?
We want them to go out, drive their Proton Saga, go to the Mama and have roti canai, because when they were younger, we asked them, let's go out. They say, let's go to Starbucks, you know? But now, if I ask my son, let's go for a pizza.
Yeah.
Nah, it's expensive. Just let's go to the Mama restaurant next door and, you know, have something cheaper. Because he works. He knows the value of money.
Yeah.
You see, that's the most important, the value of money. Number, of course, the second part is that once they have work, they learn how to work with people. They are not bosses. If they work with the father, it's always the boss son.
Yes.
And the boss son, no matter people say, yes, I will make sure he starts from the ground. He's still the boss son. It doesn't work. So once they work outside, they gain that experience. They get files thrown at them also. I got files thrown at me. Let my son get files thrown at him. You know, in that way. Plus they also have their context.
Yeah.
I mean, if they come to me now and say, I know Caroline from BFM, I say, so what? I also know her.
That's right.
You know.
Okay.
But if they have worked somewhere else, and they come and say, hey, I know Carol at BFM. I say, oh yeah, you have your own contact, your own network, which will bring benefits to my deal itself. Mm-hmm. When you join us, hopefully you join us, you know. But let them find their own way. That's most important.
Okay, so while they're finding out their own way, say they come back to you and they want to join the family business, I mean, is this something that you want?
We hope that they want to join us, because end of the day, it's a family business. Mm-hmm. I mean, even though you go for public listing or whatever, mm-hmm. you know, I think we will incentivize them. I'm sure that whatever they earn outside, as long as they like the business, mm-hmm. they will join it, because they will be paid, I'm sure, mm-hmm. handsomely. But you see, because being children, being brought up in that environment, automatically they develop this thing about business. They will not be that naive, because the grandfather was a businessman, his grandfather was a businessman, you know. Mm. So it's already built in. And like, for an example would be like exactly what my father did many years ago when he used to be in the shop. He would bring that bundle of money and we would count the money with him. 1, 2, and he'll teach us how to arrange the $5 note and $10 note, and we get our 10 cent as a token for doing that work for him.
Right.
And we enjoyed it. It becomes a family thing. When I used to bring the money, but I used to have my daughter and my son, and we used to count money together.
Oh.
The only difference was it, I used to give them $1. But they can't take it. They have to give to the mother put in the piggy bank.
$1 for inflation.
but they learn.
Yes.
They learn the value, how to count money, and as you talk about money, you talk about values.
Hmm.
And this is how they pick up.
So when it comes to a family business, if say, you know, your children are not keen to join the family business, what would you say they're missing out on?
The culture.
Mm.
The culture. Because the family business, or the Maidin business, for example, we employ more than 10,000 people, you know, and our office itself is more than 1,000 people. I think that most of the organization is professionally run. So there's no issue about being professional or not.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing is we have what we call the Maidin culture. People work with us, they are Maidinized, we call them.
Maidinized,
you know. We have certain, you know, people say we might go, you know, to one extreme, you know, we are very particular about punctuality,
mm-hmm.
very particular about honesty,
yes.
you know, which most organizations probably are.
Mm-hmm.
But we are really freaking, you know, about punctuality. That means if you ask me to be, we have a meeting at 9,
yeah.
we expect the staff to be there 10 minutes to 9.
Right.
We close the door 5 minutes to 9. You are late.
Don't be fashionably late.
Yeah.
No. And you're Maidinized.
Right.
With us this evening is the Managing Director of Maidin Mohammad Holdings Berhad, Yang Bahagia Dato' Dr. Haji Amir Ali Maidin. Now, Dato', your first song choice, I'm going to go with this one because I love this song, P. Ramlee's Getaran Jiwa. Why did you choose this?
The melody.
Hmm.
Just that you need irama dan lagu.
Yes.
No. So you, I mean, I love this song. My wife also loves this song. You know, and it's just so melodious. Even if you do not know the lyrics,
mm-hmm.
but if you see the lyrics, you need irama dan lagu to make you complete. So you can't have one without the other.
Oh, that's lovely.
Yeah.
That's lovely. They don't make music like they used to. We'll be right back after the news. Getaran Jiwa by P. Ramlee here on BFM 89.9. Good evening. I'm Caroline Oh, and this is In Conversation. With me is the Managing Director of Maidin Mohammad Holdings Berhad, none other than Yang Bahagia Dato' Dr. Haji Amir Ali Maidin. Dato', we were talking about you in the early days and what it was like with Maidin, but your father did start Maidin, I think, 1918. Is that correct?
Actually,
not your father, but
my
yeah.
father, my grandfather.
Grandfather, yeah.
My grandfather started in 1918.
Mm-hmm.
Well, actually, my father was a rich man's son.
Mm.
That means before the war, my grandfather was rich. That means he had a shop, had a car, had a driver. Mm. I mean, if you say before the war, that you are rich.
Back in those days, it was luxury.
Luxury, right? Yeah. You know? But what happened is during the war, the Japanese came, the shop was bombed, and from being a rich man, he became a pauper. And after that, my father, he had to sell on the streets at Masjid Kapitan. Everybody was Masjid Kapitan in Penang. On the street, he used to sell on the streets, and slowly they came up. Then he went to Kota Bharu,
mm-hmm.
opened a small shop there. I used to sell with my elder brother, I remember, on the streets in Kota Bharu.
How old were you at the time?
Well, standard one, standard two.
What were you selling?
Toys. And actually, for pocket money. Mm. When you go to school, you want money. My father, I remember, if you remember those days, you're still young, Carolyn, but those days, the soldiers in a packet. One packet, a lot of soldiers. You know?
The green ones.
The green ones, yeah. Right. Yeah. So one packet has got probably got 20 soldiers inside.
Yeah.
So they used to be like a dollar. So my father says, you want money? This is a packet. Go and sell it. I go to school, open the packet, sell one soldier for 20 cents, 20 cents.
Oh,
cent,
wow.
So I sell it for $2, for example. Then I get a profit of a dollar.
Oh.
So that's my pocket money. So we are taught at that age how to earn your own money.
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah. So this is how you learn. You learn. You learn the hard way.
Mm-hmm.
But then it's a pleasure of being able to come back and say, I made a dollar.
Mm.
You know. So this is, I think, how you develop real entrepreneurship. Not by just going to university, listening to lectures, and government giving extra $600 to you to go and do this and that. It doesn't work.
What's your relationship with your father like?
Well, I guess when we were young, of course, your father, you know, very strict,
mm-hmm.
you know, and very demanding. Okay, one, we must always help in the shop. There's no issue. That means we come back from school, you're in the shop. He goes for lunch. You wait down there. Then after we are finished, he's had his lunch, he comes down, then we go up and have lunch.
Did you mind doing that at all?
I think those days you don't talk to your father that way.
Mm.
That's an order.
Yes.
You know? So you come down. So after lunch, mm-hmm. you go up, have your lunch, you shower, you bring your books down, you do your homework in front of the shop. So he monitors your homework, plus you take care of the customers.
Wow.
So you learn multitasking at that age, not the current multitasking of playing video games and doing homework, you know?
And texting at the same time.
Texting at the same time.
Yeah.
So this is where you learn
mm-hmm.
the hard way, but you're also already in the business. But he was very strict. Very strict meaning you have to bring all A's for your report card. And his punishment is very simple. You get a B, one stroke of the cane. You get two B's, two strokes of the cane.
Mm.
Or no television for 2 days. You choose what you want.
What did you choose?
Take the stroke. We never want to miss television. You know?
Yeah.
But that's the way you're brought up.
Yeah.
That makes you tougher. But of course, as we grow up, even like now, my father is 84 years old,
mm-hmm.
you know. He has the passion for business. He is in the shop every day without fail. If he's not in the shop, he's in the hospital. He's 84 years old. So if he gets sick, he's in the hospital. If he's not sick, he will be in the shop.
Nothing keeps him away.
Nothing keeps him. Even on Sundays, he's in the shop.
Mm.
If you want to visit him, you have to go and see him before 10 o'clock. My mother will be screaming, your children are going to come and see you. He says, they want to see me before 10. At 10 o'clock, I go to my shop.
Was that pretty much the way it was when you were younger as well? I mean, work was work, and was there separate family time after? Did your father make sure that, you know, there was any of that?
I think during that part of our life, I think it was very, very tough.
Mm.
Very, very tough, because we were really poor. I remember my father buying one fish. You know, you go and buy one fish curry, and seven children share bits of one fish. The father mother has the curry. Really. So that was tough. But nowadays, you know, you feed your children, please take another fish, two chicken pieces, and these people say, oh, I'm full.
Yes.
I just want a burger, you know. So
yes.
That's a difference. But I think what is more important is that you was tough, but tough with love.
Mm.
So now, at his age, my father is staying with us. That means he's staying one floor above. One floor below me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have an apartment, and he stays below, I stay up, just to make sure that he's okay.
Mm-hmm.
And we drop by every day almost,
mm-hmm.
from work, drop by his place, everything's okay, have a cup of tea, chit-chat for a while,
mm-hmm.
and go upstairs. So, it works well.
Mm.
And it's very important to visit your parents.
You know, you were saying that, okay, you know, it's important. It was important for you to go out, for you to work first before you started in the family business. And, you know, you want the same thing for your children. You want them to go outside and experience real life, working for other people, getting files thrown at them, and so on. So it seems you've sort of carried your father's legacy in that sense. As a father, are you strict the way your father was with you?
I guess not as strict as I would want to be.
Mm.
You know? But nowadays you are taught different things. They say, talk to your child.
Yes.
You know, those days, cane your child.
Yes.
You know? Spare the rod.
Yes.
You know? But I think maybe in at a different level.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not so strict, but still very disciplined in terms of punctuality. You're supposed to be back by 10. You have to be back by 10.
Mm-hmm.
Or no allowances, or your car get taken away. that's how it is.
What about business philosophies that he had that perhaps you carry through today?
Honesty. My father has always taught us that if somebody sends you a good extra, please send it back. Tak halal, you know, and tak barakah. This is very important. And I think we always tell our staff the same thing. Earn your living, earn it the halal way. Otherwise, you know, the money is not going to stay with you. And I just fired two of my staff just 2 days ago for taking money from suppliers. You see? And I told my whole, we just have a meeting every Tuesday morning with all my staff. I said, you know, you take this 2,000, 5,000, you think it's going to stay with you? Definitely not. You go on your bike, you're going to have an accident, and, you know, the bike is going to cost you more than $2,000 that you stole or you took. You see? Because let's be honest in life, in everything you do. I think it's very important.
Now, Maiden, specifically, it's not just about hypermarkets, supermarkets, Emporiums. These days, the scope of Maiden is so much wider. There's the Gerai Rakyat One Malaysia, there's Tukar. How different are those undertakings for you with those initiatives?
Actually, Gerai Rakyat and Tukar are actually CSR activities, because Tukar is very interesting. It's transformation of Kedai Runcit. We do know that it's more hypermarkets open, more convenience stores open, the mom and pop stores are not going to survive. It's obvious. It's happened in the West, it's going to happen here. So the government is looking at it, how do we balance this? You know, politically, plus also in terms of their income. Right? So this came up at the labs, the NKEA labs, and then where the, and I was one of the participants in that particular lab.
With Pemandu.
Pemandu for 2 months. And this is very interesting, because then we go to the shop, we modernize the shop. The best part is when you modernize the shop, the owner becomes modernized. She comes dressed better. She puts on her makeup when she comes to the shop, because now she feels like coming to the shop. That's the difference. See? And for Kedai Rakyat Satu Malaysia, I think basically it is to sell things at a cheaper price untuk mengurangkan beban rakyat, to reduce the cost of living.
Indeed.
And it works. It works.
So when you say it's a CSR, what exactly is the goal for you on a personal level? I mean, is this something that you want to teach, you know, these shop owners? Is that what you're hoping to impart?
The satisfaction you get of helping somebody is beyond any money that you can earn from this kind of thing. And when you change somebody's life, so when you go to a two-car shop, you've changed that person who was miserable, probably going to close the shop and, you know, living in misery for life, and suddenly she's okay. And when you go and see these people, they actually thank you. That thank you is worth $1 million.
Yeah.
Because the satisfaction that, but you must be successful to be able to help others. You know, that's the only way to do it. I mean, you say, I want to help others, I have no money. It's not that easy.
No, they say it in the aeroplanes, help yourself first before attending to those under your care. You know, recently, there was some criticism about the products sold in Kedai Rakyat One Malaysia. There were allegations that the items were of subpar quality. I mean, do you think those criticisms were fair? I mean, you must have been very disappointed with the allegations, considering this is the way you look at it.
Yeah, because I'm not a politician. So this is the problem, you know, because I'm not a politician, it hurts us more, because we are not used to people telling us this is good or not good. If something is not good, you come and tell us, then we try to improve it. And their allegation, I mean, these are politically motivated. And I'm not saying that we are not at fault in the sense of the word, because the intention of Kedai Rakyat Malaysia is not only to sell cheap, but to help the IKS and PKS to come up the ladder. So most of our suppliers for this product are also IKS, PKS. So yes, there was some mistake in terms of labeling, but it's not a health, it's not a health, you know, that you're going to have the biscuit and you're going to die or something like that, you know. Probably not labeled or whatever. But now, I mean, I'm grateful that people bring it up, because when people criticize you, I hope it's constructive criticism from the heart, we improve. And all our products for Kedai Rakyat go through MOH first, Ministry of Health. Once they approve it, only then we put on the shelf.
Right. And then obviously, you know, this is something that's very, very close to your heart. You're very active on Twitter. You're on it quite a bit. And a lot of the time, you take the time to respond directly to people who have queries about it as well. When did you start tweeting?
After Kedai Rakyat Satu Malaysia.
Did you feel that it was needed?
Because my son, of course, I mean, you know, was on Twitter and said, "Dad, you know, people are criticizing. What is this Kedai Rakyat?" And, you know, you know, I said, what is Twitter? You know, come, let me heard about it, but it's a waste of time, isn't it? So no. Then you actually enjoy it because you can actually talk to people, and surprisingly, people can get in touch with you.
Yeah.
Because sometimes you're in an office up there, okay?
Mm.
The bosses are easy to talk to, but not the secretaries, huh? Because they have to get through the secretary to talk to the boss.
That's right.
But in Twitter, you can just tweet.
It's your direct line.
Direct line. I tweet. I don't even have the phone number of a minister, but I just tweet.
Mm.
And the minister replies. You know, what's the problem and what is not. So this is where you connect. And it's also very important because in business, especially in retail, you got to connect with your customers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you get all kind of comments through Twitter. You know, they tell you, your this shop is understocked. You know, why no goods today? No diapers. I went to your shop today.
Mm-hmm.
People tweet all sort of things.
I mean, do you act on those tweets as much as you can?
Yes, of course. I've got my people following my tweets.
Mm-hmm.
Where somebody tweets me, of course, somebody's following it
mm-hmm.
to make sure. And sometimes my corporate com people reply to the tweet saying thank you for shopping in my day and what's the issue. Then they will get their direct numbers and they will follow up. Because customer service, see, although we say my day, yes, we sell cheap, you know, our goods are very competitive, but end of the day, no matter how cheap you are, you have to have the service.
Mm-hmm.
No, service from the heart.
So this Twitter account, it's you personally tweeting out, or do you believe in perhaps letting your corporate comms take care of it?
No. My Twitter account, I reply.
Mm-hmm.
They have their own Twitter account that they try to reply.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if somebody, you know, they follow me, I guess.
Yeah.
My corporate comm follows me. So if somebody says, you know, I have this problem, sometimes my corporate comm will reply.
Mm-hmm.
But normally I also reply myself.
Right. And what kind of tweets do you enjoy receiving the most? Is it mostly feedback about, Maiden issues or current issues of the day? What do you enjoy?
Politics. Which I don't like to be in, but it's always interesting. And
no political ambitions?
No, of course not. Of course not. I don't want to lose my hard earned money, okay? It's really hard earned. But I think the more important thing here is that because when people start tweeting on politics, sometimes it gets into you that people are just lying through their teeth, you know. So you can't stop the urge to reply.
Right.
You know, which may be a good thing or a bad thing, depending how you look at it. But you have to be honest to yourself.
Yeah.
Even my corporate comm tells me that, oh, please slow down. You're the businessman, not a politician, you know. But I say, it's from my heart. If somebody says something is wrong, I have to reply.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I don't agree, I don't agree. I didn't agree about having demonstration in Dataran Merdeka.
Mm-hmm.
But say it's fine. But I have my shops there.
Mm-hmm.
I have 3 shops. I had to close the shops. It affects my customers.
Mm.
So, of course, I would tweet, you know. And there are my customers also who are angry with me for saying that, for saying what I said.
But the cause, free and fair elections, surely.
Surely. But let's be free and fair. Let's be fair. Okay? Is it really messed up? I mean, I'm not an election commission. I don't have the data. I really don't know the details, you know. But everybody wants free and fair election.
Mm-hmm.
You know, why not?
What concerns you most about the state of our country at the moment?
Racial sensitivity. I think we are going in the wrong direction in terms of racial and also in terms of religious.
Hmm.
I like to tell people, come to Malaysia. You know, stay in Malaysia. And they say, what's so great about your country? I say, you come to Bangsa. You turn to your right, you see a mosque. Do you want to pray? Go and pray. Right behind the mosque, there are pubs.
Hmm.
Want to drink? Go and drink. It's your choice.
Mm-hmm.
Let's not be the moral police of the world. You know, people are adults. Let them decide what they want to do.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what is right and what is wrong is between you and your God.
Mm-hmm.
You know, freedom up to a certain extent, of course.
Hmm.
You know, you don't want to be freedom like the Western society sometimes. Of course, being a Muslim, you're a bit more conservative, but freedom of choice, you know.
So what concerns you?
That one of these days, this country is going to explode. If people just do not keep that racial part, the sentiments, their comments, because religion and race is very sensitive, you know. Things that we were taught in school, sometimes we say that, you know, when you want to be with a friend, talk about things. Don't discuss your religion with your friend.
Hmm.
Because he could be a Christian, he could be a Muslim.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, he believes in his God and I will believe in my God.
Yes.
And you're going to end up in an argument.
But don't you think that not discussing it is not doing it justice?
Discussing it is fine, but discussing it in public when you have matured people and you have immature people, that's the problem. You know? But I think you can always discuss closed door. Because sensitivity thing, you have to be very careful. You know, we are not 200 years old. We are, you know, 100 years old. We are, you know, 57 years old, independent. This is a young country. It's a young country. You can discuss a lot of things, but you have to be careful what you say. And normally when you talk about religion, you tend to get very angry. You talk about your parents. Somebody says something bad about your mom. Doesn't matter if she's a bad mom or a good mom. You're going to get angry. You know, so you have to be careful.
I don't know whether I can agree. I'm just thinking, I feel that the more people talk about it, the more used, you know, we as a society will get to having these discussions and you know, this when it comes to discourse on religion. And perhaps things won't be as fiery in future, you know, if you allow this to evolve.
Truly, get politicians out of the way.
Mm-hmm.
I think the politician, if they're out of the way, I think all of us can sit down, all of us can discuss things, whether it's in open or in closed door. I think it should be okay. But people with different agenda.
Mm-hmm.
I have a different agenda, you have a different agenda. But if we have a common agenda for the better of society, it's all right. But politicians have different agenda.
Mm.
And this is very dangerous. It happens in every country. We have to be very careful.
Okay. So before we wrap up the interview, Dato, your agenda from here, you know, what are your next big plans, the big milestones for you?
You see, we just opened one of the biggest hypermarkets in Ipoh. We are very happy with the response. You know, we have a few more coming up this year.
Mm-hmm.
Next year, another 3 or 4.
Yeah.
That's the hypermarket business. I'm making sure I meet my KPIs for Kedai Raya Satu Malaysia. I've already opened 36. I have to open 85 before the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
We are doing 2 car shops. We are doing 100 a year. I have to meet that KPI.
Mm-hmm.
You know, government KPI also we have to meet, is it? You know, but these are the things that we want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, try to get our staff to be more responsible.
Yes.
So that we can spend some time with the family.
No thoughts of retirement, Dato?
My father is 84 years old. He goes to the shop.
Mm-hmm.
Inshallah, if I live 84 years old, I'll be going to the shop. You must have the passion.
Mm-hmm.
You must have the passion. You know, and the good thing about this, if I go see my father, he only talks about business.
Yeah.
Because that's what keeps him alive. That's in his mind. He doesn't say my leg is aching, my body is aching, you know. It's probably aching, you know, but he doesn't discuss this. He only talks about business.
Okay. Your final song choice for us this evening, I'm going to go with Amira Ali's Katakan Lah. Why this song?
It's a beautiful song,
mm-hmm.
okay. And the lyrics are more beautiful. It's talking about one Malaysia in terms of racial harmony, in terms of color of your skin. Let's go beyond this. We're just discussing about religion and this kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go beyond color of your skin, beyond what religion you are in,
mm-hmm.
you know, what you believe in. Let's be all together. Actually, just like one Malaysia, actually.
The managing director of Maidin Muhammad Holdings Berhad, Yang Bahagia Datuk Dr. Haji Amir Ali Maidin, thank you very much for joining me this evening.
Thank you, Kelly.
Keep the passion. Okay, it's Amira Ali with Katakanlah wrapping up In Conversation on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.